Receiving what you paid for and earned, that's fairness. This basic fairness was afforded to every American, unless you chose to follow your servant heart. For more than 40 years, public employees have been treated like second-class citizens, forced to pay into the Social Security system at the full rate, yet deprived the same earned benefit as every other American. After 40 years of injustice perpetrated upon millions of some of the hardest-working Americans, public employees, we will receive the full Social Security benefit we have earned. The 118th Congress passed the Social Security Fairness Act, and President Joe Biden signed it into law on January 5th. This act repeals two unfair provisions, the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset. The Fraternal Order Police and IFF played a huge part in the passage of the Social Security Fairness Act, and today we're going to talk about how we made history together. With us today is our Executive Director, Jim Pasco, of the Fraternal Order Police, and a General President of the International Association of Firefighters, Edward Kelly. I'm Patrick Yost, National President of Fraternal Order Police, and this is The Blue View. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining us. What a great day. We finally, after years, finally were able to fix an injustice that has impacted public employees for so long. Change of this magnitude just doesn't happen overnight. It's happened over several legislative sessions. And we're really going to dive into this of how what brought us to this point of success. But before we do, for our viewers and listeners, let's tell them a little bit about yourself. Jim, why don't we start with you?
Thanks, Pat. I spent the bulk of my law enforcement career with ATF, 25 years. And in the last few years, I was the assistant director for congressional affairs. So effectively, ATF taught me a trade, which gave me a stepping off point into civilian life. And otherwise, I'd be a greeter at Walmart or something. I was at Dewey Stokes was president of the FOP at the time I retired, which kind of date stamps me. And he just called me out of the blue one day and said, you eligible to retire? I said, yeah, about 3 weeks ago. And he said, well, Dick Boyd, my predecessor, was having some health problems and wanted to go back to Oklahoma. Would I take this job? And I said, yeah, but only for 3 years. And here we are.
Yep. Not very good at exit plans, are you?
No, very flawed.
Very good. Ed, our relationship with IFF has been great. And I think it really kind of exclamation mark when you look at what we were able to accomplish this year working together. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm a 27-year firefighter in the South End of Boston, third generation. My grandfather worked in the South End. My father worked in the South End of Boston. So I've been there for a while. Not exactly a social climber. But I got involved in the union. I got elected 20 years ago, the president of Boston, then was president of the Professional Firefighters of Massachusetts, starting in 2011. And I came down to DC in 2016 as the general secretary treasurer of the IAFF. And I got elected president in 2021.
You and I have that in common. I was the, we call it the national secretary, but I was the national secretary for 14 years before becoming president. So we kind of took the same path that got us here. So that's good. I really want to dive into this, and I want to talk about why now. Why were we successful now? But before we do that, there are a lot of people that may be tuning in, listening, or are watching that truly don't understand how we got to this point. So Jim, if you could you give us a little bit of background on how the windfall elimination government pension offset provisions were put into the Social Security system, what the intent was at the time, and how it missed its mark?
Became part of the Social Security legislation in the early 80s. And the purpose there, as has, happened a 100 times since, was to infuse additional cash into the system, which even then was starting to show weaknesses at the seams. And there are a lot of rumors about what the motivation was to target public sector employees. And I just want to clear this up right now. Nobody knows why they did it, except that they needed the money. I've heard stories about somebody being mad because a teacher had gotten his kid expelled from school. I've heard talk about a cop had stopped the chairman of Ways and Means in Illinois. I've heard stories about firefighters who
That's
were...
a lie.
It's the only one that's a lie. But in any event, nobody actually knows. But my first exposure to this, and I was affected by the law, my first exposure to this was in 1995. I was sitting in the FOP office with Bernie Teodorsky, who at that time was the vice president. And a cop came in just off the street, a guy out of Philly Five, and he was madder than hell. He busted in like Yosemite Sam. And he says, we got to do something about this Social Security problem. I'm getting ready to retire, and I find out I'm going to get hosed on it. And he's going on and on and on. And we're polite to him and taking notes, and he leaves the room. And I said to Bernie, what's this all about? He says, well, he's right, you know, and he started explaining it to me a little bit. And I said, well, wait a minute. I'm affected by this. So I have not only been an advocate for the FOP on this, I had a personal stake in it as well, because all federal employees of my era did not contribute to Social Security. And as a result, wouldn't matter how many quarters I've gotten. I was penalized and with everybody else. So I first became aware of it in 95. And we worked on it as an issue every year, but we could get absolutely no traction on it. And over time, unions in the public sector, teachers, firefighters, obviously, and others became more active on the issue. And over time, over a painfully long length of time where we'd gotten nowhere, in the last couple of years, we've coalesced and worked together in a unified front with a unified strategy and so forth. And actually, that's what put it over the top. And I would say, I have a prejudice in this, but I think the fact that we were able to use law enforcement and all first responders, the firefighters, the police, EMTs, as kind of poster children for this screw job, forgive me.
It's a legal term.
Yeah. put a face on it that resonated. And another thing that it did, because police and firefighters tend to be politically more conservative than some of the other unions, we were able to attract Republican support, because we would not have gotten this done without Democrats, and we would not have gotten this done without Republicans. This had to be truly bipartisan. Or it wasn't going to happen. So there's an awful lot of credit to go around, but I think initially it goes to the real energizing of the relationship between the IAFF and the FOP, which came about around, for whatever reason, 1921. I think Ed said that was the year he was elected. So. But in any event, here we are.
You know, I look back at it. I remember, of course, you don't know what you don't know until you need to know it. And when you need to know it, a lot of times when it comes to legislative stuff, it's too late. So, 1977, 1983 is when they made these laws. And I don't think anybody truly comprehended who they were until we ended up getting to the late 90s. And the late 90s is when we realized, oh, wait a minute, people are starting to roll onto this and they're getting impacted by 60% of a benefit of which they've earned. They're required to pay 100% of that benefit should they work outside of the something that was exempt from the Social Security system, earn the points they needed in order to receive a benefit. Comparison based off of what they pay into the system, and now finding they're getting a 60% reduction. I remember sitting, having people talking to me. Ray Franklin is one that comes to mind. He used to be a second vice president of the FOP. He's trying to explain this to me. And, as a person who didn't see Social Security as something would be on my horizon anytime soon, it was really hard to comprehend this. And I think it's kind of what got us into this place. We came up with some legislation years ago and said, hey, we're going to fix this Social Security problem, fuse some money into it. But the people who were impacted from it weren't even seated at the table, because they weren't going to be for years. And in lies our problem. This is where we really found ourselves in, something that just didn't make any sense whatsoever. So let me just say something right now, because I know when this entire discussion started and we were getting some momentum, there were people in Congress that were arguing, saying that we were receiving some generous benefit because we're public employees. Or are we getting something that we didn't deserve or we didn't earn? So let me just stop right now and just make it very clear that there's not a single benefit we're talking about here that we have not paid for. So if a person did not pay into the Social Security system, they shall receive zero. But if someone did work in law enforcement or work in firefighters, and I would argue that our profession is probably greater impact than any others. There may be higher numbers of teachers just because of the sheer number of teachers. But in reality, if you look at the ratio, if you look at public employees, the ones that are, you know, public safety, the stresses of this job means that we tend to retire at a much earlier age. And because of that, we're going into other professions and we're paying into the Social Security system. We're earning a benefit that we should receive like every other American. Yet we are the only class of employees in the United States that were required to pay 100% in the Social Security system, but not allowed to receive the same benefit as every other American. You know, I've said it often. I know Ed laughs at me. I mean, Jim laughs at me when I say this, but it's true. If you take the same scheme that Social Security Administration came up, or Congress came up with on windfall elimination, government pension offset, if this was a pension fund or a money manager was doing the same scheme, we would call it embezzlement. Yet because Congress passed this law and called it a windfall elimination or called it a government pension offset, they legalized theft. And for 40 years, our public employees, some of the hardest working Americans in this country, were deprived of the very benefits they receive. And I know for us, my journey in the FOP and talking about this issue, you know, this has been very passionate for our members. It's been our number one priority since 1997. And I know, you know, for us, it just, I remember, you know, when we had all the unrest and riots were all over the country, you know, 5 years ago. And, you know, getting calls of members wanting to know, hey, what are we going to do? You know, this is kind of a dark day for law enforcement, for public safety. And at the same time, I was getting phone calls from retirees saying, man, look, I get it. That's some bad stuff. But I want to know what you're going to do today about fixing Social Security, because this is so important to them. You got members, our members living at a poverty level because they were simply denied very benefits that they're entitled to. So kind of take us a journey. You know, that's my experience of dealing with my members. How did it affect your members? What was your feedback you received?
We're all in it together. You know, we also come from a job where, you know, traditionally we work two or three jobs. Most firefighters, our schedule, a lot, you know, we're all on the hustle.
Yeah.
A lot of y'all members are working moonlight and,
yeah,
you know,
trying to make ends meet,
doing security at a bar every night, paying your quarters into the system. Our members work two, three jobs their whole careers, paid all their quarters into the system. You know, you mentioned some of us, because of the demands of the job, do retire early and get secondary careers, pay their quarters in, and they get screwed. You know, I worked with a good buddy of mine. Let me regress. Let me say this. Without the FOP and the work that you did, you two in particular, the FOP, this doesn't get done. Your leadership, Pat, I watch you go right at, you know, certain elected officials and in no uncertain terms, put it directly on them. And Jimmy, without your guidance to all of us, the wisdom that you brought, the experience you have on Capitol Hill, which trying to navigate the machinations of the sausage making in the U.S. Congress is a learned skill. And without your guidance, this doesn't get done. It was, you know, success got 1,000 fathers, right? I mean, everybody was, a lot of people, a lot of our rank and file members put the heat on.
Yeah.
On these members of Congress to get this done. This was probably the single strongest grassroots effort I've seen from the public employee unions. And as you mentioned, it's embezzlement. They stole
our money.
They stole. Yeah. I like to say, you know, the difference between a thief and a robber is a thief takes when you're not looking. They robbed us. They did it right in front of us. Yeah. But it's also when we were meeting with Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, who's a staunch supporter of this, and in a voice in the Republican caucus, the Senate, to get this done, I said to him, you know, I mean, you may as well just say we're not going to give the redheads their full benefit. And he said, hey, I'm a redhead. I said, you know what I mean, you know. And but if you think about how discriminatory it is, they basically just picked us out and said, and I think it was jealousy. I think they said, well, if you're getting a pension from the city, you don't need.
But here's here's the thing. I paid for my pension.
Yeah.
I earned it. You know, when let's compare this to a private sector and public sector. OK, I paid in a pension system. You paid in a pension system. That was our retirement system. We were not paying in a Social Security system. I paid in the Social Security system for something outside that agency. I earned my quarters. I'm eligible to receive this benefit. But you didn't. Nobody ever said, look, I'm only going to give you 60% of your benefits. So therefore, you only have to pay 60% in. No, they required us to pay 100% into a system that every other American paid into. But I'm not entitled to receive it. You'll take 60% away. However, put all that aside, if I was in a private sector and they took advantage of some tax benefits that said, all right, I'm going to pay into a 401k and get this tax deferred, you know, compensation or benefit from it. That's not entitled. That's not touched by this at all. So somehow public employees really kind of took it on a chin. And there are so many provisions that were attached to this when it came to your Medicare and all everything else tied to it because of some provision that somehow suggested that we were going to get fat off of government. But in essence, we pay for these benefits, just like people are paying in the private sector and have their 401ks, or they have their other tax shelters. That's all legal for them. But for us, we were penalized. So
one of my friends that I worked with, great highly decorated firefighter, did about 25 years working in the shipyard for General Dynamics. Mm-hmm. They padlocked the doors one morning. They got Stugatz for their retirement or anything else. He was... At the time, we didn't have an age limit for hiring in Boston. He got hired on the fire department at 45 years old, Vietnam vet. Did 20 years till they kicked him out on a busy ladder truck. Been hurt. Didn't want to take a disability. So this job was too good to me. I don't want a disability. But he paid all his quarters in. He got, in our pension system, 20 years doesn't get you much.
Yeah.
It doesn't get you over the hump. We got to do 32 years in the Massachusetts system. So 20 years is a significant cut to a pension. So he paid all his quarters in, got a crappy pension from the city. And because he was getting the penny, the money that he paid in could over, and he worked on the side, he always paid in, he got screwed.
He'd already earned that benefit.
Correct.
That's the other side of this. You know, we talk about people leaving the profession because it is, you know, because of the demands of it. They do tend to retire at an early age. But let's talk about those that say, hey, I'm going to follow my servant heart. And I'm going to become a public servant. I'm going to work in a public sector. I've already done, you know, my years in the Social Security system in the private sector. Now I'm going to come over to the public sector. The day that you made that decision to follow your servant heart, they're taking 60% of a benefit you've already earned away.
Right.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, so all of those who get up and argue saying that there's a generous benefit and public employees are compensated to, they truly don't have a clue what they're talking about. It's not based in reality. It's not, there's no foundation of any truth. And it was very upsetting to hear many of our public officials getting up and trying to justify how they should not make this change because somehow we're receiving something we're not entitled to. So I think it's important for us to make it very clear to everyone. We're not asking for anything that we did not earn.
I think Jimmy brought up a good point that we don't get this done without the Democrats and we don't get this done without the Republicans. Right. And it's important to point out that some Republicans were speaking, as you said, against this. So weren't Democrats.
Yeah.
There were Democrats whipping against the discharge petition in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, you know, the sands of politics are shifting under our feet.
Oh, there's no question. I think we're in a new era.
It's such an irony. It's really, really divided country with the politics being 50% are on one side and 50% are on the other. And at the top of each party, there's tremendous toxic enmity between the leadership, let alone the members. And in the middle of all this, Pat and I went down and talked to President-elect Trump, who's hardly friendly with the Democrats, with the knowledge of Leader Schumer and imposed upon President-elect Trump, with whom we'd had conversations about this previously, to give us support so we'd have the Republican help that we needed to get it over the hump in the Senate. And I know, by the way, that the IAFF was doing similar things. And Trump, almost without hesitation, to his everlasting credit, agreed to support us, and the rest is history. We've got 26 Republican votes in the Senate, both on cloture and on final passage. And he and Schumer both deserve a lot of credit. Among other things, in terms of the lift, it was a truly bipartisan piece of legislation, and there hasn't been one of them since declare a national peach week in 1986.
You know, Jim, it's really the key. I mean, you both touched on it. The key to this whole thing, what's the change here? Why now? Why did we actually look? There's a whole lot of work that went into this. We wouldn't have got here. You know, again, change like this, you know, changing momentum like this doesn't change overnight. It takes, there's a lot of people that are involved in it. But the key is this had to be a bipartisan. And those who tried to pull it into a partisan argument, our ability to be able to push back on that and personalize it, I think, made a difference. I know that I want you to look at the dynamics of this. Here we have a bill that's going to fix an injustice, those who truly understand it. And sponsors of that bill were the Speaker of the House, the Minority Leader in the House, the Speaker in the Senate, you know, leader in the Senate. And I can go down a whole list. You had President Biden who said that he would support the bill. You had President Trump who, you know, committed that he was going to support this bill at a time 1 week before the vote, truly made a huge sea change, I think, in our ability to be able to you started feeling it. You could see people were backing away from it. All of this shows just how bipartisan this bill is. So those that want to criticize one side or the other, at the end of the day, it's when we truly work together. And I say this over and over and over. You know, it's great. You know, regardless of what your politics are, if you're a Democrat, you tend to lean towards believing what that is. You're Republican the same way. The end of the day is show me one meaningful piece of legislation that has passed Congress and signed into law that's really been impactful to our members that has not had a bipartisan approach. Just one. Go ahead. Clock's ticking.
I don't think you do anything in this town unless you touch the four corners, unless you've got the support of House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats. You can't get.
So I'm going to tell you one thing I'm very proud of. And this is, I'll give you an opportunity to say the same thing, because now I'm talking to my members. You know, again, this has been passionate for us for 20 years. 20 plus years, 25 years is a priority, for the FOP. And we kept building a little more and a little bit more. And if you look at the numbers, you know, we tend to, you're right. Jim mentioned it earlier. It's tend to be more of a Democratic leaning bill. And we, with a few Republicans that support us. But I think over time, we were able to educate enough people on both sides of the aisle to recognize that there's an injustice here that need to be fixed. And, you know, I remember for years coming here to Washington, and, you know, we have a fly-in where we'd go hit Capitol Hill and talk about the issues that are important every single year. And Social Security was always top of that list. And I would ask that question, you know, when are we going to fix this? And the answer we always got was, is you guys just aren't being treated fair. We need to fix this. We need to fix the entire Social Security system. Well, here's the problem. The people we were talking to for decades are still the same people. And they have yet to fix the Social Security system. So this was nothing more than just a talking point. They would sign on to our bill saying, hey, this is great, knowing that it would never get a vote. We'd even have a hearing. But last year, testified at three hearings. So we actually had some movement with it. We had some things that go in our favor. Look, I'd rather be lucky than good any day. But you got to do the good part in order to have the luck be in your favor. And that's where I want to recognize our members, give you a chance to give praise to your members as well. We created a grassroots effort in this bill that I have never seen in Fraternal Order of Police in our entire time. We had members constantly. I mean, I would talk to senators and they'd say, man, I get it. I'm getting 2,000-3,000 phone calls a day. I get it. I understand where you stand on this. And I think what we did is we said, you know what? You've been talking about this for too long. And as one of the senators called and asked if we would push this off to the next session so they had some more time to examine it, I told him, look, my members have worked too hard to get to this point. They deserve a right to see those who grip and grin and shake their hand and say they support them. Let's see how they vote. And that's really what it came down to. You know, I cannot be more proud of the leadership in the FOP across this country. Our members who just every single day got on the phone, called up and just never relented in letting their members of Congress know just how they felt about this bill and put them on notice. We're watching.
Well, this bill was like a minor miracle.
Yeah.
Right. And
I said a major miracle.
Yeah. Major miracle. And I'll explain a little bit why, this was the fourth bill since 1985 that was signed into law on a discharge petition. Right. It was a $215 billion scored pay for. Let me rephrase that. Cost $215 billion without a pay for.
Well, but I'm going to stop you there for a second. It wasn't a pay for. That just confirms how much money they've been stealing.
100%.
Okay.
But when you talk about a bill, which I don't care if you're in a state house, if you're trying to pass an ordinance in your city hall, when you get to the U.S. Congress, legislation takes years.
Yeah.
Unless it's a straight up emergency.
Or unless it's something bad. Bad things happen quick.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, I know in Massachusetts, there was an upskirting bill that 2 days after it happened on the train, that bill was passed. It's not in the law. So you can do it. You can do it in a day if they really want it. The reality is, if you want to pass some pro-worker, pro-labor legislation, it takes a long time and a long, hard fight. And it was a couple of things happened. To your point, Jimmy, most of our members, when they became Social Security eligible, called the Social Security agency or went into the office, gave them the Social Security number. They told them what they were getting, and they went home and said, okay, I get this. The advent of social media educated our members to go like, you're actually getting screwed. A lot of our members had no idea they were getting screwed.
Yeah.
So righteousness is a powerful motivator.
Yeah.
And being treated unfairly gets you out of, you know, can motivate you as well. So our members came in strong and heavy. And I think when you look at the fact that we got this thing done after 40 years of fighting for it, at a time when a lot of things came together for us. You know, you talk about going down to see President Trump. President Trump committed to, when we were dealing with his people, he committed to helping us on this. I was in the Senate chamber when Senator Tim Scott came down and voted no on cloture. And Senator Rubio grabbed him walking up the aisle, who clearly had talked to President Trump, and talked to Senator Scott for about 3 minutes. And the two of them walked back down together, and Tim Scott changed his cloture vote to up. Clearly, there was support coming from Mar-a-Lago that
way. Oh, there's no question. Absolutely. No question, yes.
And, you know, that coupled with the fact that, you know, we didn't get all it. There was one Democratic senator that held out on us, that voted no, Tom Copper, a gentleman, a nice man. He just had a constitutional opposition to it. And we had a couple of the independents, the guy from West Virginia there.
Manchin, yeah. He did not vote on the final vote. He was absent, yeah.
But culture was our battle.
Yeah. Right?
So,
well, you know what it was? It was a litmus test. It let us know real quick where we stood.
Well, we only needed 51 to pass the bill. We needed 60 to pass.
Well, now we needed 60 because it was a revenue bill. Oh. So we needed 60. But you know, I got to tell you, in my count, I was thinking, oh man, we might get 61. And in a cloture vote, we did pretty good. We got what, 65 or so.
Like that.
But you know, and the final vote was 76. Well, here's the thing. Look at the ones we had four that didn't vote. Of those four that didn't vote, they were going to vote for it.
Right.
They voted previously or were co-sponsors. So it was it was definitely a sea change. And
which is for, you know, a lot of our rank and file members wouldn't know A, what cloture is, and B, you know, if a senator or a member, particularly in the Senate side, if they know the legislation they support is going to pass without them being there, and they have, you know, in that case, some of them had, one was going to be the vice president of the United States tomorrow in 24 hours.
And he had actively
supported.
He was an active supporter.
He was a loud voice. He was there for the
cause. Vance during the campaign trail was speaking about this bill and a need for it to be fixed. Yeah. So he met with law enforcement officers at the Republican convention, thanked them for their service, and even made this part of his talking points when he met with them.
At with us too.
Yeah.
Came and spoke to us. J.D. Vance came and spoke to us at our convention.
Solid. You know, his state was, you know, profoundly impacted by this. You know, some states are impacted more than others. Every state's impacted, but more than others.
One where he and Sherrod Brown worked together in a very bipartisan way.
This doesn't get done without Sherrod Brown.
That's right. Let's go back. There are two people that I need to recognize. You know, one of them was my congressman for years, and both of them are not in Congress now. But boy, what a way for them to finish their term in Congress. And that is Gary Graves from Louisiana, and Abigail Spanberger from Virginia. Were it not for those two, we would not be sitting here today. We'd still be talking about this injustice that's been done to public employees for far too long. No, they seriously deserve every bit of credit for us getting to where we are. There are a lot of people. There are a lot of people in the House. There are people in the Senate. You know, a lot in the Senate. We wouldn't be here. But at the end of the day, it all started with them. And we owe them a tremendous debt of gratitude. And I got to give Garrett some credit here. You know, he was swimming upstream. He's swimming upstream in a Republican-led House, trying to convince them that this was a bill that needed to move forward. And although it became very frustrating at times with the pace, if you remember last Congress, this got woke. You know, the rug got pulled out from under us. We were getting 2 days before we was scheduled to have a vote in the House, reaching the 290 rule. They ended up pulling it from us, went to committee, and they killed the whole thing. So here we are, you know, we come into the new Congress. It took us 20 months to get to that 290 in order to get it moved last, you know, in 117th Congress, 118th Congress, we did it in 8 months. And we could have said, hey, let's force this vote, but we knew what happened in the last one. And to Garrett Graves' credit, working with the Ways and Means Committee and getting them to really discuss this, we didn't get anywhere with it, but they had to respect the fact that we were trying to find a path forward. So when it came down to a vote, it was hard for them to say bad things about it. Although there were plenty enough in the Republican Party to say it, people in the Ways and Means Committee were really, really reserved because they knew that we were doing everything we could to try and find some resolution to it. So I've got to give credit to those two, because if it had not been for the strategy, it would had not been for them holding monthly meetings where we were all part of and pulling all these organizations together to focus on how we can have that education piece we needed, the research we needed, all of the elements in order to be able to get this grassroots effort to the point where we could pass it. None of this would have happened without those two. They deserve the credit.
And absolutely. And Speaker Johnson, was in favor of it as well.
Yes.
You know, when I spoke with Speaker Johnson about it, and he, you know, even the discharge petition, Speaker Johnson could have killed it.
Sure.
If he wanted to.
Yeah. He could have.
But he allowed it because he believed in it. He was a co-sponsor of it. So, you know, I mean, we had a lot of people who just, you know, maybe they wouldn't necessarily be more fiscally conservative, but they knew that this was an injustice. Right. This was wrong.
Right.
People were getting screwed.
You know, I'm going to make an observation, and maybe this might be a little cocky on my part. But this is my takeaway. You know, on January 5th, we were all at the White House when President Biden signed his bill. And I was looking out at everyone was there, and two things kind of struck me. One is that there's not a single one of us would have been in that room if it wouldn't have been for most of the people in that room. There's no question. They played a huge part, you know, getting us to where we are. But I'm going to tell you what the other was. This is where I guess maybe if it had not been for public safety, if it would not have been what Fraternal Order Police had done and IFF had done, I think we were at a tipping point. We're at a tipping point that we were able to educate enough conservative members that our members have relationships with. It really pushed us over the top. And so, in respect, nobody would have been in that room if it wouldn't have been for our two organizations as well. Not taking anything away, because as you mentioned, you know, there's a thousand fathers. There's no question. Yeah. But I really think one of the tipping points is our influence that we were able to have as public safety on conservative members of the House that really got us to a tipping point where this was finally
House and Senate. One.
You know, in this kumbaya moment, I agree with every word you said, but you know,
somebody make a note of that. Jim, agree with everything I said.
Success has a thousand fathers. Well, in this case, looking around that room, I felt the same thing, except there were 1,001 people in there taking credit. And 1,001st was a former member from the great state of Massachusetts, Richie Neal.
Yeah.
Who killed the guy as chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the previous Congress had killed the bill.
He absolutely single-handedly killed the bill.
Took a victory lap on it, and I'm thinking, how Washington is this?
Yeah.
And I, you know, Richie, I mean, John Larson was looking against it.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, like, listen, that the teachers were a powerful voice.
Oh, no question.
Yes.
You know, AFSCME was a powerful voice. All the public employees were loud and proud and deserve credit for this.
No question.
But to your point, Pat, this doesn't get done without a bipartisan effort. And the key to the bipartisan piece of this effort was the FOP, the IAFF, to have those relationships with the Republicans. That, you know, we've always looked through the lens that we're here to do business.
That's right.
Our loyalty is to our members.
People who support us.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
Yeah. You know, if you got to go back in time, look, if news and the whole cycle and everything changes pretty quick. But you got to go back at a time of just the week of the vote, the week before the vote. And Jim and I went and met with President Trump at the at Mar-a-Lago. Asked him, look, you know why we're here. This is important to us. This is an injustice. And you kind of laid it all out for him. So look, you guys have supported me, and I'm going to be here with you because I know how hard you've been working on this. He said, how much is this going to cost? And I said, well, the congressional office says it's going to be $196 billion over the next 10 years. Oh, Elon's not going to be happy. And if you think at that time, that, you know, there were a lot of discussions about the waste in government and all. But I think for us, I truly think that was a turning point. We felt like we might have the votes to pull us in the Senate, but it wasn't until after that meeting and after we saw, we put out a message about our visit.
Trump's, and we cleaned up the account of it in our messaging. You just dirtied it up a little bit, but not a lot, because his language was far more colorful than that about the cost of this thing.
Yeah, so. but you know, I guess the point I'm making is it truly was, you know, look, you do the work you need to in order to put yourself in a position for success, but we all know that success has a certain amount of luck and timing. And for us, that luck and timing, because we had done the other part, we were able to take advantage of that luck and timing. We did it at a point, these strategic partnerships that we've all created, with members of Congress, both on the Democratic side and Republican side. You know, I remember, you know, meetings we've had with Schumer trying to work this at what was the timing of getting this done. And look, let's don't take away the fact that twice you and I both, say you and I, the FOP and IFF both hosted rallies at the Capitol that were just, I mean, sure, you know,
I think it was the first time we ever did one.
That's right. And they gave tremendous focus to this issue nationwide, particularly the second one. On that beautiful day on the
The second one was very cold, raining. I hadn't seen rain like that in a while.
I got to give credit for that second rally to Randy Weingarten from the teachers. When I was talking to her, she said, we got to do a rally. I said, all right, I'll put it together. I called Pat. Yep. We started putting a platform together. And then,
by the way, to my knowledge and recollection, we had never worked particularly closely with the teachers. And in this one, we were arm in arm. And that, you know.
It all helped.
Absolutely. There's no question. Like I said, you know, standing up there and saying there's a lot of people who deserve credit for us getting to where we are. There's no question about it. And they've been in this fight all along. The difference is that we were all rowing in the same direction. We were very coordinated what our message was. And we all enhanced and you know, complemented each other in this path to get it. And so when it, at the end of the day, I know there are a lot of organizations that are up saying all the things that they did in getting this bill passed. And you know what? I would say that they're right. We all did some part. And there's no way that any of us would have made this on our own. But I know what we did. And I know what the importance it was in the shift. You could feel the sand shift, you know, beneath our feet. You could see things moving in our direction. And that last week, all about the timing and the planning that we did. And it was aces. It got us.
It was tense up here that Christmas week.
Right? It was.
One of the comments was we were like 72 hours from Christmas Eve and it wasn't done.
Yeah,
that's right.
And we were worried that, initially, you know, one path that was.
Yeah.
We wanted to pursue was trying to attach it to the NDAA. Yeah. We had to hold the line and say no way,
or make it last after the funding bill, which would have
killed
effectively
it.
Killed it, because as they say here in Washington, once they've got their must passes done, they start smelling that jet fuel, and there's nobody left in the room.
There were a lot of, and we got to give Schumer credit for that.
Sure,
Schumer had, you know, talking to Senator Schumer, he had a lot of ideas on how to move this thing forward. I remember one of the last conversations I had with him when we were at the rally, saying, I asked him, please, you got to put this before the continuing resolution. If this is after the continuing resolution, we're dead. And the next morning,
I don't remember please coming out of your mouth at all.
It was.
I think you were a little more.
It was. Yeah.
You better have a vote on this. Taking
liberties.
I will say that he was not happy.
You're nice refined on a Sunday morning. You weren't so on the.
Yeah, he was. he was not happy with the conversation at the time, but obviously the next day when he called, he was.
You got to give him credit. He showed up to the rally.
There's no question.
He committed to putting that thing on the floor,
and he did.
And we, you know, I'm not saying I was talking to him every hour, but every couple of hours saying, if this thing goes past the funding bill, we're screwed.
No, there's no question. No question.
I saw him as a young congressman on the 94 crime bill, which was very, very important to the FOP membership. I was still with ATF at the time, so I was on the inside of it. Schumer actually led the fight to pass the 94 crime bill out of the House, and then was a leader in conference to clear up the differences with the Senate. So it was Biden and Schumer and Orrin Hatch of Utah on the Republican side who actually put that bill through. And that bill was a huge lift. And I've been saying ever since, you know, a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about Schumer, but I've seen him as a legislative strategist, and he's as good as they get. And he showed it once again.
Well, I'll give him all that credit. And look, they're a long list, and this is where I get in trouble because I'm gonna start, you know, spouting off some names, and that's where you get dangerous because there are so many people involved. But I'll just focus on it. I mean, we talked about the House, and you know, clearly Spanberger and Graves are key. But when it comes to the Senate, which is a little harder to get things passed, you know, the Senate's a little slower, a little more methodical, and because of that, a little bit more strategy in order to be able to pull it off. But you gotta look at Susan Collins. You got to look at
Susan Collins.
No doubt. You know, you've got to look at Amy Klobuchar. Cinema played a huge part. You know, fine. She was out. She was finished. Finishing her term, but she volunteered to be the whip on this and really made a big difference. Cassidy from Louisiana played a huge part of making this front and center. The list goes on and on and on. And I know as an organization, we are going to recognize all of those by their hard work and advocacy for what we did, and encourage all the other organizations to I've always said, you earn respect. When you don't get it, you demand it. And when they give it to you, you give them the recognition that comes along with it. So we need to look at those that supported us in this bill. And we need to make sure they know that we didn't forget the fact that they did it and that we truly appreciate it. And I know IFF is doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I mean, I haven't been around that long, but my 20 years in union, high-level union leadership, I've never seen a piece of legislation, a contract, a decision have such an impact. Like people,
no question,
regular people on the street grab me in a coffee shop and say, "Hey, thank you. That made a big difference to my mother."
Yeah.
My mother's dad died years ago. Her Social Security got cut to nil. She worked 40 years, for some, the Catholic Church or something, and getting nothing. And it's going to make such an impactful difference in their life.
You know, we talk about the gratitude, and I want to talk about the regret. You know, gratitude is man, what a great, this is the gift that keeps giving. You know, if you think about it, we have just affected generations. There are people that don't even, they've been paying, they're paying into a Social Security system that they haven't even thought about whether they're collecting their benefit or not. Right. Now won't even know what a windfall elimination or a government pension offset is. And I want to come back and talk about government pension offset because that was a even bigger injustice that.
Before you do that, I just want to say in the context of what you were just saying, Joe Grimaldi, our vice president, who's never at a loss for words, said in after passage, he said to you and then said to me in writing, "This is legacy shit."
Yeah, no doubt. You know? No doubt. So look, the gratitude is, hey, we finally fixed this for generations. There's no question. People who earn something are now going to receive a benefit. But my regret is that it took us 40 years, and there are people that for 40 years had this theft perpetrated on them.
People died in poverty.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And weren't even entitled to their own money. You know, I want to talk about, we talk about windfall elimination. That's the one we focus on a lot because it affects a larger percentage of people. But let's look at the injustice of government pension offset. You know, government pension offset, basically, if I could just in simple terms, you pay for a benefit for your spouse to receive your benefit. But they apply a formula to it. And 75% of those spouses that would receive a benefit, if you were not a public employee, would receive 100% of what that benefit is. 75% of them were zeroed out. You know, so, I had a senator call me and tell me, he says, "Hey, man, why don't we work on this? You know, I've got a better path on how to do this." And I explained to him all the reasons why we would not back off on this. This is important to do it. But I made a suggestion to him, "Senator, I'm going to give you some advice. You know, it's free, so you don't have to take it. But I would be very careful in telling anybody you have a better bill. If you think this is a better bill, be prepared to explain to a spouse who just got zeroed out on a benefit that their spouse has earned. Them to be paid for them to be able to have that benefit that are now getting zero. Tell me how you have a better bill, because the bills that were being thrown around Congress never touched the government pension offset. And that was, you know, that's the other part of this injustice we don't talk. It's a smaller number, but man, an injustice nonetheless.
What a terrible screwing.
Yeah.
A terrible, terrible screwing for those widows or survivors, you know?
Right.
So, and a lot of them, you know, are going to get, you know, a little bit of a retro, a 1 year's worth of retro.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
And their life is just going to change dramatically. And not only that, like a lot of these, you know, elderly people who are being taken care of, subsidized by their children who are also raising their own children and struggling in their own way. It's a generational impact. Yeah, like it's going to take the pressure off families of three generations.
Yeah. And it's not a handout.
No.
I mean, it's the whole thing here. That's the thing that gets lost in this whole discussion. 40 years. We're not getting anything that every other American doesn't receive.
Right.
It's just because you chose to be a public servant. Some of the hardest working Americans.
Penalize you or your widow.
That's it. That's it. Generations to come. So let's just, you know, wrap this thing up, but let's talk about what it means. So there's a lot of things that are going to happen now. Your president signed it on January 5th, so it's become law. Now the Social Security Administration needs to figure out some formula on how they're going to do the back pay. You know, people keep asking me, you know, how much am I going to get? Am I entitled? And look, the easiest way I can answer this question is that if you paid into the Social Security system and you received, they gave you your base pay until you are being reduced by a certain percentage based off of the formula they applied, you should go to what that number was before they applied the formula. So if you know that it affected you, what is your number? It's already defined. It's defined based off the amount you paid into the system. You receive that benefit for it just to remove the windfall elimination portion of it, and you should receive it. Government pension offset might be a little bit more complicated because you got to find those that are actually affected by it and who have been zeroed out. You know, so that it may be a little bit more detail on how do you achieve that. But so where does it go from here? Well, obviously, the Social Security Administration needs to come up with some plan on how they're going to implement this. And there's no timeline that I'm aware of that says when they're going to do it. The thing that we need to recognize is whatever day they decide that they're going to do it, it goes back to the way it's written months after December of 2023, which means it would be January of 2024, the entire year of 2024, everyone would be eligible for whatever compensation they should have received, prior to that date. So there's 1 year of, at least 1 year. If it takes them 6 months to implement this, then it'll be a year and 6 months. But there is some relief coming, not only in their pay, but also in back pay as well. So one thing that we did, now we'll put it up on a screen for our members. We created a question and answers. And as we get these questions, we'll add them to it until the Social Security Administration actually comes up with some formula, and then we'll just pull it down. But for right now, trying to answer those questions on when am I eligible, you know, how does it affect me? What are the effective dates? All of these things are answered in that Q&A. So if you have any thoughts on how this affects you, or if you want to know, then you need to call the Social Security Administration. But if you want some general information, we'll provide that information for you on this question and answer booklet. That's an electronic booklet that's out there. So, gentlemen, as you know, this is a great discussion. It's time to start wrapping it up. But what I want to do is I just want to tell you how grateful I am for IFF. This relationship, this last couple of years of working with you has been a pleasure. It's something in our organization, although we've worked with IFF in the past, I don't think we have ever done it to the level that we are now. And I want to tell you, I really do appreciate that leadership. There's so much that we can accomplish when we're working together. And I know we have a few legislative initiatives that we talked about moving forward and take this energy and keep moving it forward. But I want to thank you for your leadership in that. I want to thank you for your partnership and working together. There's not a whole lot that can stop us from accomplishing what we need.
I agree. I mean, I think that it set the playbook for hopefully whoever's coming in behind all of us to keep this partnership and our ability, what we can do together when we walk through the doors together of an elected official. It's a loud, loud message.
We can't drop the ball on this.
No,
not at all.
It's one of the, we just were able to resolve satisfactorily one of the most important issues confronting our members. But there are plenty more we need to work on together.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stick and Jim, I want to thank you too. You know, your insight over the years, especially in my term as president, has been so vital to. It's been some very challenging years for law enforcement profession, and your institutional knowledge and your relationships you've established here in Washington and your guidance for me has been just something that I can't underscore enough. And I want to thank you for all that you do for the men and women who follow their servant's hearts and do the jobs that are so important to
Thank America. You. Speaking on behalf of myself and all the other second bananas who were involved, it's a pleasure to work with two guys like you who know exactly where they want to go and are willing to listen to various alternative ways of getting there and then decide on the right one. It was a pleasure.
Well, I had a moment during this, and I got to give a shout out to another second banana, Kevin O'Connor, a long time.
My dear friend.
One of our lobbyists, a firefighter from Baltimore County, but been lobbying for the IFF for 25 years down here with Jimmy. And, you know, we couldn't get this done without each other. The sky is the limit to what we can do together. The challenges that you guys face. The last five, you talk about how tough the last five, six, 7 years was in law enforcement, where they kind of found a way to turn
public servants to public enemies overnight.
Yeah, overnight.
Overnight.
And we're not far behind, by the way. Mm-hmm. We have IFF members sitting in jail for allegedly misadministering medications as paramedics and stuff like that. You know, we are in to not the same extent, but we're in the same boat. But I can tell you this again, righteousness is a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And the calling, the profession, the need to have good guys with guns when there's bad guys with guns is never going to go away. Yeah. And I'm proud to be partnered with the FOP.
Wow. No, we are as well. And gentlemen, thank you for taking some time to share with our members. I think it's great that they hear this backstory on how we, a very difficult journey we took and how we did it. And we, you know, I tell my members, you know, all giving, patting each other on the back and, you know, trying to give me credit. And reality is I didn't do anything. All I did was try and keep it between the ditches and just keep pushing it down a road. And, you know, it's a journey we all took together and this is a victory we all shared together. So, gentlemen, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you for your leadership. Thank you, Jim. Yeah.
And to our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning into the Blue View Podcast, where we talk about the issues that are so vitally important to men and women who suit up and show up every day in communities across this country and make a difference in the lives of those we serve. Thank you.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. To get the latest from the National FOP, make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at GLFOP and on Instagram at FOP National. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.